Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Alarmy. Check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our Guest Alarmist series, only on Patreon.
Like, what is that instinct that made you run to the bathroom?
Shame. Oh, 100%. I felt so ashamed. This is like, it was, she was like an older woman too.
Right.
And she had this, like,
you were disgracing her.
She was disgraced. Like, make no mistake. She, like, if she came in with grace, she was disgraced.
Yes.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the flu pandemic of 1918, also known as the Spanish flu. Here's what you need to know. What is now known as the Spanish flu was one of the most deadly plagues in human history. An influenza virus that was exacerbated by World War I and spread throughout the entire globe, altering the course of history. There's no way to know for certain where the virus originated, but many historians believe it was outside of Camp Funston, a U.S. military base in Kansas. Several young men from a nearby town had flu-like symptoms around the time they reported to training camp. The virus then spread to other soldiers in the training camp who were headed to war in Europe. Other possible origins include the Shaanxi province in China, or the trenches of World War I in Etaples, France, or Aldershot, UK. The outbreak happened in three major waves. The first wave was in the spring of 1918. It was a more mild strain, known as the three-day flu, and it had a 2% mortality rate, which is typical for influenza. However, in the tight trenches and barracks of the war front, the virus morphed into a more deadly version of itself. When the second wave hit in the fall of 1918, the mortality rate is believed to have shot up to 10% in certain areas. By this time, the disease had made its way to the Caribbean, South America, West Africa, South Africa, Russia, and Asia. The third and final wave came in the fall of 1919, with outbreaks almost everywhere on the globe, including Australia. This wave had the cruel irony of taking the lives of some soldiers who had managed to survive the war. Symptoms of the disease included headaches and fatigue, a dry hacking cough, loss of appetite, sweating, and stomach aches. It was in many cases complicated by bacterial pneumonia, which was often the cause of death. Many of the infected got a blue-violet skin color in their face. Complications also came about because of doctors misdiagnosing patients, which is understandable because at the time, they didn't even have a word for virus. The effect it had on healthy young men altered the war strategy and is widely believed to have led to the collapse of the German armed forces and the end of the Great War. Fun facts, aka death stats. The United States lost 675,000 people to the Spanish flu in 1918, more casualties than World War I, World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War combined. This means about a third of the U.S. population was infected. From 1918 to 1919, an estimated 500 million people were infected globally. The flu killed about 50 million people. Those between the ages of 20 to 40 were most affected. An estimated 43,000 servicemen mobilized for World War I died of influenza. The flu completely wiped out some villages in Alaska, and others lost most of their adult population in a matter of weeks. More people died of influenza in a single year than in 4 years of the Black Death, aka the bubonic plague, from 1347 to 1351. Five pandemics have occurred in the past century: 1918, 1957, 1968, 2009, and 2020. The 1918 pandemic was the worst of them. The month of peak mortality in the pandemic was November 1918, the same month that the war ended. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And we're very excited for our guest today, our friend, writer, comedian? I mean, all the things, actor Avital Ash. Hi, Avital.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for having me.
I want to tell our listeners that they really should subscribe to your mailing list, because you are about to take out your solo show. You're going to put it up in New York. You're going to put it up in the UK.
That's right.
And it's called Avital Ash Workshops Her Suicide Note.
Yes.
Please go to avitalash.com, subscribe, follow the handles, and check out the show when it comes out.
Thank you. Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the show?
Yeah. It is funnier than the title, but there's a lot of heavy themes in there too. And roughly, you know, I've been depressed my whole life. My biological mom committed suicide when I was a baby, which sounds sad, but I was a very bad baby. So and that's kind of the area that we're
sure.
Hey. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I had a great time doing it. I did the Edinburgh Fringe for the full month.
It got incredible reviews.
Yeah, I feel very lucky. Thank you. It did get some very, very kind reviews. And then I only had done it in LA as like a work in progress trying to find it. So I'm going to do it in LA for the first time, then New York, then back in London, back in Edinburgh. And we'll see.
Well, that's exciting.
Thank you.
We love to start off the show by asking our guest, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
Okay, this I think is so dark.
Nice.
We're ready.
You're on brand.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Great. Because there's been a lot.
Sure.
But then this thing just happened. So already there was stuff keeping me up at night, not sleeping well. And then at like 1 a.m., I ended up on Reddit And it was like, who's someone where like they're so terrible that it's ruined their art for you and you can't watch their movies or listen to their music. So it's just like scrolling the answers that people left. And then somebody wrote, I can't listen to Lost Prophets anymore. I wasn't a huge Lost Prophets fan. Don't know if you even know them. They're a Welsh band.
Okay. I'm not familiar.
But when I was about 15, I met the singer and I have his number in my phone. I actually checked. I have two numbers for him in my phone, like an American number and a Welsh number.
Okay.
So I'm like, how much did I talk to this guy? And was it him? Was it someone else in the band? I looked it up. It was him. And it is like the most, it's weird to say this excitedly, it is like the most vile shit that you can imagine.
Oh my God.
He was molesting like babies.
Oh my God. Horrific. And
horrific. That's why I'm like, I don't know. Do you want to hear this?
Yeah. But so you had no, first of all, you had no idea that
no idea.
He had been charged with this. And
he's been in prison and he got stabbed in prison, which is good.
Oh, wow.
He didn't die.
Wow.
But yes, insane. And the most horrific part is that he was like working with the moms in at least two cases where the moms were like involved.
Oh my God.
Like seemingly like groupies who really liked him who were like, sure, you can have access to my 10-month-old. Like insane.
Wow.
You're like, how does this even happen? And then I was reading the court documents and then that's been like a lot of what I've been thinking about this week is you're like, I talked to this person and I don't remember it that well.
Right.
But I definitely wasn't like, oh, this is an evil person.
Right.
Like there was no part of me. You go back and you're like, were there clues?
Is the alarm that like you were in touch with this man or the fact that you may be in touch with other people like it and you just don't know it yet?
That's a great question. I think it's this like macro sense of like, wow, you just don't have any fucking clue.
Yeah.
If you want to read up, I guess there's a documentary I haven't watched yet, but yeah.
Wow.
Is that fun? Is that fun for a podcast?
That's real. That is real.
Very real.
That's the real Avital Ash.
The real. I'm trying to figure out how to transition from that.
How to make that funny. Or...
Well, we don't have to make it funny.
No one's listening beyond here. They're just like, fuck this guest. I'm done.
You know?
It's just hard not to make the whole show about this.
I know. Right. Because that's another thing
so
curious, you want to dive
into. Yeah, about so much, but.
Well, but you know what's also surprisingly similar to events that occurred, that traumatic events in our lifetime?
Mm-hmm. Our traumatic.
The Spanish flu.
I was waiting for.
That's right.
Also pretty macro, you know, like it was pretty omnipresent.
Yes.
That's true. That is true. We're still dealing with flus. Mm. I am method, and so I developed a cough for this episode.
Oh, me too. I've been workshopping mine for a few weeks, actually. I'm very committed to the craft.
So we won't have to cut out the coughing. We'll just compare and see who has the best one.
You know what? I think in this episode, we should keep all coughs.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah, that's okay, fair. That's fine. I will not edit them out. I'll mark them and we can decide to keep them.
Yeah, it's part of the sound design.
Great.
Yeah. It's an ACAG show. All coughs are good.
By the end, we'll all be dying of influenza.
Right.
But
perfect.
You know, at the end of the day, you would not have wanted to be alive. It sounds like a very scary time to be alive. 1918.
Oh my God, yes.
The numbers are like the statistics are out of this world, like scary.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Right.
Going up from 2% mortality to 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So scary.
So scary.
Something I read, I mean, they think that it was 50 million people that died. Mm. But some, you know, there are some estimates that are like 500 million people. You know, well, we're infected for sure. But, the estimates are
they're a massive range. They're a huge range. Like they can be as low as 20 million or as high as 100 million because there was so much unknown around it.
And again, we have to remember there weren't any tests. You couldn't just get yourself a coat like you now. It's interesting to be recording this podcast post COVID. I mean, post COVID, I say that with like quotes, air quotes. But at least it's been, you know, 3 years since almost since lockdown, mm-hmm. we know a decent amount more than we did. I feel like when COVID hit, people were like, it's like the Spanish flu, and everyone was like kind of rushing to compare and to draw any kind of wisdom or anything from what happened then.
Right.
But now with time, we do see the similarities. Yet at that time in 1918, there were no tests. Like, you couldn't just go to the pharmacy and get yourself a COVID test and be like, this is it. I've got the influenza of 1918.
No, exactly.
Right. It wasn't a word yet, right? Flu wasn't like a word that we know.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Like, now doctors are terrible at diagnosing you with stuff and we have names for
right.
it. Then, like, there wasn't even the name. So they were awful at it. I also wonder if it was like with COVID, where like your symptoms could range from literally nothing or a cough to death.
Mm.
Yes. Right. I believe there were similarly, there were asymptomatic people who had it. And then that, of course, makes the spread worse. And they hadn't even like been able to see. I don't know how science works, but they couldn't see the a virus under a microscope yet. They could see bacteria, but they couldn't see viruses.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So imagine how confusing this must have been.
Right. And if you feel well, like, there's no reason not to go out and give it to everyone else because you have no idea.
Yeah. So I feel like we should start off by putting not the Spanish up on the board.
And yes, explain why.
This is, of course, known as the Spanish flu. But in fact, it didn't originate in Spain. So this is and perhaps we should also put the press up on the board as well.
Let's do it.
This is from history.com. Though news coverage of the flu originated in Spain. During World War I, Spain was a neutral country with free media that covered the outbreak from the start, first reporting on it in Madrid in late May of 1918. Meanwhile, Allied countries and the Central Powers had wartime censors who covered up news of the flu to keep morale high. Because Spanish news sources were the only ones reporting on the flu, many believed it originated there. The Spanish, meanwhile, believed the virus came from France and called it the French flu.
It seems very much like whoever smelt it dealt it. Like, they were like, this thing's happening. And they're like, it was you.
Exactly.
Yes. I think that's exactly what happened. And also the fact that censorship was so big during this time because of the war which we're obviously we're going to put up on the board as well. So they were just stifling reports and trying to hide information because they didn't want people to panic.
And they also, it was strategic too, military wise, right?
Right.
You didn't want the other side, you didn't want the other side to know that all your troops were sick.
Well, you didn't, and you also didn't want your own country to realize that they were, when all these being troops sent, were going abroad, you know, it was almost a death sentence for many of them because they knew the numbers at that point, and they knew that some of them would succumb to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Dark.
Yeah.
There's a lot of distrust.
Yeah.
That you know.
So the war effort, and then also the press you have up on the board. I see Clayton put up.
You want to put the war
effort?
Can
you see a board? Can you see a board somewhere?
Oh. Yes, I have it here, which I'm going to share with you later, unless you want to look at it now. I guess we could.
Well,
I don't know. Can you guys see it now? Can everyone see it but me? Is the board in the room
pretty
with
much.
Us right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on
a Google Doc.
You're the American public, and we're the newspapers not reporting the Spanish flu.
Okay, perfect.
Do you want to see the board now, though, or do you want to wait?
Does it help our storyline if I am in the dark like the public?
Yes. I think you be the public for now. Yeah.
That way you think the podcast is going great. Like you thought the war was going great.
This is your method, so this should work for you, right?
It's perfect. Right. Yeah. Writing on the board, she is bad. Worst guest we've ever
You're gonna
had.
See
can, you
it.
Believe, can you believe she opened with a story about baby rape? Why is she here?
So we're putting up the war effort. I mean, as we should put the early military camps I'm going to read a lot and then we'll talk about it. This is from Smithsonian Magazine. Several Haskell County men in Kansas who had been exposed to influenza went to Camp Funston in central Kansas. Days later, on March 4th, the first soldier known to have have influenza reported ill. The huge army base was training men for combat in World War I, and within 2 weeks, 1,100 soldiers were admitted to the hospital, with thousands more sick in barracks. 38 died. Then, infected soldiers likely carried influenza from Funston to other army camps in the States. 24 of 36 large camps had outbreaks, sickening tens of thousands before carrying the disease overseas. Meanwhile, the disease spread into U.S. civilian communities. So there were no response or acknowledgement to the epidemics in March and April in the military camps. It was unfortunate that no steps were taken to prepare for the usual reoccurrence of the virulent influenza strain in the winter. Now, this is in regards to World War I. The disease caused by a new variant of the influenza virus was spread in part by troop movements during World War I. Some believed infected soldiers spread the disease to other military camps across the country and then brought it overseas. In March 1918, 84,000 American soldiers headed across the Atlantic and were followed by 118,000 more in the following months. This is from Human Virology in Stanford paper. The war brought the virus back into the U.S. for the second wave of the epidemic. It first arrived in Boston in September of 1918, through the port busy with war shipments of machinery and supplies. The war also enabled the virus to spread and diffuse. Men across the nation were mobilizing to join the military and the cause. As they came together, they brought the virus with them and to those they contacted. The virus killed almost 200,000 in October of 1918 alone. Mm. And that is just in the United States, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
In November 11 of 1918, the end of the war enabled a resurgence as people celebrated with parades and large parties, a complete disaster from the public health standpoint.
Right.
A rebirth of the epidemic occurred in some cities.
Mm-hmm.
So not only was were they spreading just because they were traveling, you know, travel was very important at that time. We were going back and forth. The troops were coming home. So it's spreading that way. But it's also just people were having parties and celebrating. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine, if you think about it, I can't imagine a world war during COVID times.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. No, that's exactly
like where you're being enlisted to serve and you have really no choice but to go.
Right. And already people with COVID, like we were acting like it is a war.
Right.
I have to stay home. This is awful. Imagine if you didn't.
Right.
So much worse.
Yeah. And we were talking about this yesterday. Like we are probably traumatized by COVID in ways that we don't realize yet.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
because it was. And war, you know, having gone to through a world war is traumatizing as well. Put those two together.
Right.
Yeah.
The trauma of that generation is, it speaks volumes. I mean,
it does. Well, that's why it's good that they suppressed it, because you actually can't have a trauma response if you don't know what's going on, and that's much healthier.
That's right. And it doesn't seep through in any other ways, which is what's awesome about repressing trauma. You don't see it come out in
No, if you shove it down deep enough, it evaporates or turns into a diamond, like pressure on coal or something.
Yes.
The other factor that like is part of all of this too, the pandemic, the wartime, but also just like the lack of like sanitation, like in unhealthy living quarters, like the practice of hygiene was very different back then.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like they just didn't have a protocol, say they were kind of ignorant to it, you know what I mean? But it only exacerbated the effects.
Mm-hmm.
And contrast that again with COVID, where it was like hand sanitizer
everywhere. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There are some lessons learned for sure, but back then, just like more poverty, more unsanitary conditions, like just made for even worse spread and contagion.
Yeah. And people were living. I mean, these are the times of like tenements going on in city living was not what city living is today. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many people jam packed in very poor conditions and also unable to work. Right.
Right.
And it's not like there was a lot of government support, like in terms of like funding or
right.
any sort of help in that way. So.
So the breadwinners were dying.
Breadwinners were dying. And yeah. also you were having to make the decision of, do you stay home and protect yourself or do you go out to work? And not to say that people didn't, you know, if you can, of course, now all we can do is compare our experience through what we went through to this very similar pandemic that happened 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. But and not to say that people didn't have to make those decisions during COVID. But back then it was like you were just it must have been so scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, you know, there was government aid to incentivize staying home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You maybe couldn't afford to stay home.
Yeah.
Right.
And
you need medicine or, you know, you need the money to pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the difference too, that like, you know, I mean, I know we don't want to spend too much time comparing, but like with COVID, it was like international. And because like news is so international these days, like you kind mm-hmm. of knew instantly globally what was happening. Whereas mm-hmm. back in 1918, you don't necessarily know what's going on the other side of the globe. It's like, it's a domestic problem. And this, like, you just don't know the scale. But what's crazy about it is COVID was a huge thing. I mean, it stopped the world, it felt like. But, like, the numbers are much smaller compared to the Spanish yeah. flu, mm-hmm. which not everyone knew about, but was killing such a large percentage of the population when you actually look at the numbers, which is the scariest part of it, I think.
I feel like we should put the virus up on the board, yes. the virus itself.
Do you want to just call it the virus, or do you want to
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess there's the influenza virus.
Sure.
I don't know exactly which one we'd put up on the board because I'm sure
it's like a type,
variants.
Right? There's like
yeah.
type A
H1,
or B.
H1N1.
It's funny if you remember Trump saying like that this was all being blown out of proportion, that the flu kills more people. And actually what that means is not that COVID wasn't serious. It's that the flu is also very serious.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can be.
Yeah. So this is from a Pan American Health Organization. No matter what they called it, the virus attacked everyone similarly. It started like any other influenza case, with a sore throat, chills, and fever. Then came the deadly twist. The virus ravaged its victims' lungs. From what I've read, people would turn a bluish red color. Their skin there would also be
gorgeous.
I know. Yeah. And a crackling of the lungs when you would breathe.
Oof.
You would also bleed from your ears and sometimes your nose and your mouth.
Movie stuff.
Yeah.
And it, what was scary about this too is that like it really affected the like healthier younger like 20 to 40 segment of the population because of the like intense immune
yes.
response. Like,
I want to talk about that. That's very important that we talk about. This is from the National Archives. The plague did not discriminate. It was rampant in urban and rural areas from the densely populated East Coast to the remotest parts of Alaska. Young adults, usually unaffected by these types of infectious diseases, were among the hardest hit groups, along with the elderly and young children. In 1 year, the average life expectancy in the United States dropped by 12 years.
Wow.
So I just want to note that in 1917, life expectancy was 48.4. Just so
without the
low.
Without the virus.
Without the virus.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy.
That's pretty low. We're almost dead, just
yeah,
so
we're,
you know.
We're elderly.
Okay. In 1918, it went down to 36.6.
Wow.
So we're dead in 1918.
We're dead.
Yeah.
We're dead. Goodbye.
Crazy.
This is from BBC. To understand why the 1918 strain would have had this effect, we need to return to its origins. The 1918 flu is thought to have only just evolved from a strain that typically infected birds, acquiring mutations that allowed it to infect the upper respiratory system. This meant that it could be transmitted through the air in coughs and sneezes. Coughs.
I liked it.
So it was infected more easily this way. This is important for two reasons. Without previous exposure to the virus, the body's immune system would not have been able to produce an efficient response. Just as importantly, however, the virus itself had not yet fully adapted to life in a human body. Mm. Contrary to expectations, it is not normally within a flu's virus interest to kill the host. It is not good for the virus to kill the host as soon as it infects it, because that host has less chance of passing the virus onto other people, says Barkley. Instead, it just needed to hitch a ride for long enough to spread through the coughs and sneezes. As a result, most viruses evolve to become less pathogenic over time. But the 1918 virus had not yet made those adjustments.
So maybe we need to put the lethality of this specific strain on the board. Like, we have the virus itself, but like maybe the fact that this one was like so new to the human body.
Our lack of immunity?
Yeah, sure.
This is from, so this is in regards to how it killed so many young people. This is from the BBC. Besides replicating very quickly, the 1918 strain seems to trigger a particularly intense response from the immune system, including a cytokine storm, the rapid release of immune cells and inflammatory molecules. Although a robust immune response should help us fight infection, an overreaction of this kind can overload the body, leading to severe inflammation and a buildup of fluid in the lungs that could increase the chances of secondary infections. The cytokine storm might help to explain why young, healthy adults who normally find it easier to shake off flu were the worst affected, since in this case, their stronger immune systems created an even more severe cytokine storm. So isn't that interesting that just the fact that they were healthier was actually... put them at a disadvantage.
Right.
Yeah, and they didn't really discover this cytokine storm until the 50s or 60s or something. Let me
Should
look
we
that
put
up.
Cytokine storm on the board?
But yeah, it was just yeah. But it was awful to read about, because it created basically like a feeling like you were drowning in your own body. Like where your lungs would create fluid and you would you would drown in your own body, which is like so disturbing.
That one wasn't so bad, but I feel like the talk of it,
she's like checking
it.
Her lungs.
Do I feel like I'm drowning? Oh God, am I drowning?
I'm drowning right now on the podcast.
Oh God.
I mean,
that is crazy.
Crazy.
And 1974, it was first discovered.
And people would wake up feeling like, oh, I'm not feeling too great. And then by the end of the day, they were dead.
Yeah.
It was fast.
Yeah, it happened super fast.
It's interesting that we were trying to, adapt and adjust and survive, and the virus was doing the same thing. Like, it kind of did it wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't mean to kill you that fast. I was trying to.
Right. My
Oops,
bad.
Sorry.
Oops. Yeah.
Everybody
was failing.
The life of a virus is just like, they're just like kind of like surfing from body to body, just like hoping to like go as long as they can. Like, it's such a weird organism that they
Yeah, it's like a shitty star fucker or something like that in Hollywood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a name dropper.
Yes.
Yeah. Couch surfer. Yeah, exactly. Like, I can think of a few people who I won't talk about on the podcast, but like a few names come to mind about actors who are kind of like viruses.
Right. And if they sleep on your couch and they burn it up, then no one's going to let them sleep on their couch. So then they basically die. That's kind of it, right?
Yeah.
You want to be a good enough guest that someone's like, they were annoying, but they were tolerable. We'll let them into our home. You
know? Yes.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to cause a cytokine storm.
No, not too quickly, because then you're going to run out of people that you can sleep on their couch.
Yeah. I also have people coming to mind and also won't say their name, but it feels really apt. It's a perfect comparison.
So from now on, we're going to start calling people like that viruses.
Yeah.
I was a virus staying with me instead of a guest.
Yeah. Something I found that was interesting. People talk about President Woodrow Wilson's connection to perhaps making the flu and not making the flu worse, but
well,
it's like that connection to World War II.
Right. Well, his involvement in World War II. I mean, the whole thing with this virus in World War II is that they're so, or World War I is that they're so interconnected.
Yeah. Let me read this and then tell me what you guys, you know, what you guys think.
Okay.
This is from, we should put President Woodrow Wilson, Wilson up on the board. This is from Smithsonian Magazine. On April 3rd, 1919, during the Versailles Peace Conference, Woodrow Wilson collapsed. His sudden weakness and severe confusion halfway through the conference, widely commented upon, very possibly contributed to his abandoning his principles. The result was the disastrous peace treaty, which would later contribute to the start of World War II. Some historians have attributed Wilson's confusion to a minor stroke. In fact, he had a 103-degree temperature, intense coughing fits, diarrhea, and other serious symptoms. A stroke explains none of the symptoms. Mm. Influenza, which was then widespread in Paris and killed a young aide to Wilson, explains all of them, including his confusion. Experts would later agree that many patients afflicted by the pandemic influenza had cognitive or psychological symptoms. As an authoritative 1927 medical review concluded, quote, there is no doubt that the neuropsychiatric effects of influenza are profound, hardly second to its effect on the respiratory system. So it's possible that we could blame World War II on the Spanish flu.
Well, that's it. Let me ask you a question.
Later.
Amazing.
Are we determining like what's to blame for like how deadly this pandemic was, or like how literal are we being, I guess, for like what's to blame for the Spanish flu?
Good question.
Or like, I think what's to blame for the spread?
I think just for how it was such a global killer, like it was a pandemic. And I think how it affected so many people.
So we're not trying to get to, it was like a pig that, or like a bird kind of situation that sparked. It's more like what lended, what contributed to like the mass spread of this.
I think so. It's really, it's one of those things where no one really knows where it actually started.
Right.
Some people say it was Kansas. Some people say it was in France. Some people say it was, I forget, you know, there are theories about where it could have started. But it definitely spread very quickly because of the war effort. And
And viruses like this, I'm sure, existed and were localized and, you know, were harmful to a certain population, but didn't last so long that they were able to sort of, what do? They like morph into a new strain, like a worse strain, spread more quickly. And I think with like more in the, as they get into more bodies, there are more variations are created, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this would be better for an expert to talk about, but the spread of the flu was part of what made it so deadly.
Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm.
And I think we should also put capitalism up on the board because, you know, I think that the government's need to keep things quiet stemmed from the fact that the country needed to continue to work.
Yeah.
Right? To continue producing enough whatever we were doing for the wartime effort. And they couldn't let people know because then they just essentially sacrificed all of its citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then we let's put that on the board. Not just work, but like more specifically, like governments, like it's almost like not an agenda, but it feels like very calculated that they were withholding information. It's like, what's a good phrase for that?
I'm trying to think of it too. I keep thinking
propaganda
like
or something. That's a really loaded word, right? But
no, it is. Yeah. I mean,
capitalist propaganda.
Yeah.
Oh, the capitalist machine. The deadly.
What's the sheriff or whatever in Amity, in Jaws? When it's like, you know, we have to close the beaches and
right.
You know, it's all about the tourism and
yes.
keeping,
Yeah.
The beach is open. They were trying to keep the beaches open.
Yes, because it's the summer. That's when they make their money.
Yeah.
In those summer towns.
Chief Martin Brody.
Okay.
No, he's the good guy.
He's the one trying to shut down the beach.
Yeah. You're right.
So,
sorry.
We did that.
It's
we
the mayor
this.
Who doesn't want yeah, to close, the mayor. Right?
Yeah,
it's
the mayor.
Yeah. Look up the What's mayor in Jaws. Okay. Come on.
Larry Vaughn.
What is it?
Larry Vaughn.
So the Vaughn effect. We can call it the Larry Vaughn effect.
All right.
We got there, guys.
How do you spell Vaughn?
V-A-U-G-H-N.
Okay.
That's a more villainous spelling, I would say.
Yeah,
totally.
Versus just the regular V-O-N.
Yeah, you could have gone V-O-N.
Not a grocery store, the invisible U-G-H, really.
You could have gone A-W-N, and that would have been nice. That's like a fawn. You know, like that's too sweet. No, Vaughn.
Too cute.
I want to put two other things up on the board, and we'll briefly discuss.
Okay.
One of them is the misdiagnosing that was happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is from history.com. With no cure for the flu, many doctors prescribed medication that they felt would alleviate symptoms, including aspirin, which had been trademarked by Bayer in 1899, a patent that expired in 1917, meaning new companies were able to produce the drug during the Spanish flu epidemic. Before the spike in deaths attributed to the Spanish flu, the U.S. Surgeon General, Navy, and the Journal of American Medical Association had all recommended the use of aspirin. Medical professionals advised patients to take up to 30 grams per day, a dose now known to be toxic. For comparison's sake, the medical consensus today is that doses above 4 grams are unsafe.
Wow.
Symptoms of aspirin poisoning include hyperventilation and pulmonary edema, or the buildup of fluid in the lungs. And it is now believed that many of the October deaths were actually caused or hastened by aspirin poisoning.
Wow.
So you want to label that for the board, yeah?
I think misdiagnosing.
Okay.
Go ahead, Avital.
Oh, just also completely misunderstanding the medicine.
Well, yes.
Right.
It was
right.
A new drug.
Yeah. Because I would think in the right doses that could help, because it's still fighting inflammation, right? I always mix up like Advil, aspirin, and
yeah,
they have different mechanisms, but I think they all work on inflammation, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I honestly know Tylenol,
Advil, yeah.
They're pain relievers.
We're an ibuprofen household. We don't.
Ibuprofen, I think, is the one that definitely decreases inflammation.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Which is what's in Advil is basically ibuprofen. Yeah. Tylenol has a different approach, but it's also an anti-inflammatory.
And we're talking aspirin, right? So is that still an anti-inflammatory?
Aspirin? Doesn't it thin out your blood? This is where everyone finds out how dumb we all really are.
Which is really funny because we all like that's meds that we all have access to so easily now. Even when you said 400 grams or whatever, I'm like, sure, that's probably normal. And then it was like the standard is 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an anti-inflammatory.
It is. Yes.
Also.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
According to you. Okay, so that
it thins out your blood
lives.
Or something. People take it for heart.
Okay.
Heart.
But just the anti-inflammatory part seems like it could have saved lives
yes.
if they weren't giving so much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's
important. I'm a doctor.
We're not doctors. We're definitely
yeah, yeah. I have no idea, but that seems.
Yeah. I mean, and another thing I want to put up on the board was a shortage of available doctors and nurses. Not just because they had gone overseas to help with the war effort, but because imagine in a small town, you know, maybe the doctor got sick. Maybe there's only one or two doctors in the town. The doctors get sick themselves. They're having to, work with patients all the time. And all of a sudden there's no doctor in that town not only were they short-staffed, but they were becoming ill and... I mean, I can't imagine what a mess that would have been.
Yeah.
It's also crazy to think that seeing a doctor at that time could have saved your life or could have been the nail in the coffin.
Right.
Like maybe you would have beat it on your own, but you don't survive the aspirin poisoning.
Right.
And also
access to doctors, right? Wasn't it like only, did you just say this, that only the rich had access to doctors?
No, but I would believe it.
Yeah.
I would believe that.
Access is important. And also just think about the... remember how bad it was, like when they were talking about how like the buildup of bodies during COVID in like our advanced times of medicine and science, imagine yeah. back mm-hmm. then all of yeah. the like even higher death toll, like where are all of these infected deceased going? Like what do you do?
Yeah, that's that because and in some places they wouldn't allow for gatherings, right? And what would you do? They wouldn't be able to have a funeral. So in my research, I found sometimes you would just have like this like deceased body on your sort of porch, on like in a coffin with just like nothing. There's no ceremony or anything.
No, wow. So I mean, talk about that drama too.
Right. So we had nothing to complain about during COVID, I guess.
No.
We had Zoom. We had TV. We had food delivery.
Food delivery, yeah. Right. Yeah.
We are babies.
Yeah.
Hard is hard. I don't mean to just, you know. No, sure. It was traumatic.
I'm in like a small minority there where like I'm so anxious all the time and feel like everything is about to explode. So when everybody else was anxious, I had a real reprieve.
Oh.
So when people are like, it was traumatic, I'm like, for sure. Yeah. Everybody was traumatized. I can
totally see that.
Finally,
it's
for
like,
you,
oh,
yeah.
Now everyone is freaking out as much as I am.
Right. Yes. What a relief.
Right.
Like, I can finally calm down. It felt kind of good.
I do understand that. Yeah. I know. And it's like, you don't have to explain yourself all the time. It's like, right. Yeah, now you know.
Yes. Everybody just assumes you're anxious because the world's on fire. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, exactly. That's why. That was a good time for me. Minus people dying. Of
yes,
course.
Of course. Understood.
But there's no way to put this up or on the board. But I do want to talk about masks as well, because apparently people were anti-maskers even during the 1918 pandemic. There were the anti-mask league that sprung up.
Put them on the board. Anti-mask.
Yeah, anti-mask league. And you know, there were particular cities like San Francisco and Pasadena, California, that were the first to put out masking rules, like masking laws. And they would fine people $5. And if they were caught without a mask, and then they would, if they couldn't pay for the fine, you'd go to jail for like a few days. And it was.
I wonder if it lines up with any of sort of the political implications now.
Like interesting.
If it would fall in the same kind of party line.
Yes, I wonder. Because it did become very politicized at the time.
Yes.
As
then too.
I'm sure
at that
someone
time, but yeah, I wonder
that.
If it would coincide with the same parties. Yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting. It's like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. And but they would also what is it they would call them? People who were anti-mask, slackers. The slackers.
Slackers.
Doesn't that sound like it could have been the same thing in 2020?
Totally.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Okay, I feel like we have a good board. We have a hefty.
One thing
tonnage.
I want to address, because is the first thing you said was that it's kind of a misnomer, the Spanish flu, obviously. Do you want to continue to call it the Spanish flu for the remainder of the podcast? Or should we call it the influenza?
The flu pandemic of 1918?
Right.
Sure, we could call it the flu pandemic. We'll put it.
That's good.
Yeah, and we'll put it on the, we'll call it the flu influenza pandemic of 1918, and we'll also put Spanish flu on the title, so when people search, they'll find it.
It does probably not even need to be called out, but wow, those parallels too of like Trump calling it the China virus and flu.
Oh yeah.
It's just quick. Just the name is political.
Yep. Quick to point fingers.
Yeah.
Well, like I think in South America they called it like the Wilson flu or something. Like they named it after our president because I guess they were like, it was basically whoever you wanted to blame you could just like call it that.
Yeah. Sort of a Rorschach test.
Yeah, exactly.
Marketing. I mean, titles are powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, who's to blame for the flu pandemic of 1918? Is it not the Spanish, the press, World War One, the war effort, the early military camps, the influenza virus itself,
continue,
lack of immunity, poor living conditions / hygiene, cytokine storm, President Woodrow Wilson, global travel, capitalism, the capitalist machine, the Larry Vaughn effect, keeping that beach open, misusing medicine, shortage of available doctors and nurses, or the anti-mask league and company.
Ooh.
This is a really tough one. One thing we have early military camps, but like, you know, there, you could trace it back to Kansas, and you could just trace it back to like that. But there's just not a lot of certainty in terms of that.
Yeah,
it's funny that the place in Kansas was Camp Funston, which sounds like a real fun time. Doesn't sound so Funston to me.
No, not so Funston. No Funston. It's a cruel joke.
Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes the universe likes to have fun.
Right.
You know, fun with words.
Yes. I also think it's interesting that like there's been, I don't even know, again, I'll blame being sick, but the reluctance to prescribe fun drugs because people will overuse them. So like people will need hard painkillers, but because of the opioid epidemic, I guess.
Right.
But meanwhile, they're like over-prescribing aspirin, so you're dying and you're not even having the fun of being...
No, you don't get to go out high.
Ooh. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
What a waste.
What a waste.
So I feel like we can take out the Spanish, obviously, number one.
Yeah, okay. Take it out.
And there are a few things that we can fold into the Larry Vaughn effect, as we all know is the mayor of Jaws who... didn't close the beach. Everyone knows that.
Right, yeah. Right.
So we can fold capitalism and the capitalist machine into that because it represents that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basic, but it kind of that folds into the war effort, kind of Like, is what is the beach that's being kept open in our minds? Is it the
I think that's more public safety versus wartime safety is the way I'm thinking of that.
So not closing down sort of certain public spaces, that kind of thing.
I feel like the war was like happening whether or not we liked it. It was the at home, how do you deal with the infections that you do know about that you're maybe not sharing with the enemy, but like you could control a sick population at home while also being in a war effort. Does that make sense?
The way I see the Larry Vaughn effect too is not disclosing all information, all facts to the public.
Right.
In order to whatever your needs might be, or in order to continue to make money, in order to continue to provide for the war, you know, just the fact that you're trying to control the narrative.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Withholding information
from the public.
It's detrimental to public health.
Gotcha. Right. Okay.
Which, yeah, that does make me wonder if there had been more transparency around it, would that have affected the war effort?
Perhaps.
Or would it be like, now people aren't partying, but you're still being shipped off to wherever and...
Yeah.
Or it's a good question, because it's also like how I mean, I'm sure there are people who are anti-war back then, but like how obstinate. I feel like we're so used to people just like blatantly disregarding, like, you know, or being skeptical of the government. And I feel like Vietnam War was like a big part of that, where people were like so anti being drafted and like the political reasons for being there. But like how much of that was a part of the American psyche at this time.
I think that's a great point, because I don't think a lot of it. Like, I think you had way more sort of just blind patriotism at the time.
Right.
Big time.
People were very nationalistic, and there was not a lot of like anti. Although maybe I'm wrong, but and maybe a guest.
No, I think you're right. I mean, during both of the wars, you know, once the U.S. went in, I think that there was a lot of support,
right?
You know,
for the effort,
yeah.
Okay.
And you have to wonder, was it because people didn't have all the information, you know,
or maybe people would have been like, let's be better here at home so that we can send healthy troops to war because the war is that important, versus like, you know what I mean?
That's interesting. Yeah.
If we were so pro war effort.
I'm struck by how like global this time was during a time where, like, when was the phone invented? But like, how are you talking to people?
Right.
You know,
the radio.
There's the radio, right? So, but how it just feels like a time where a lot of communication is needed. A lot of people need to get on board, but the whole world is literally at war, and it's so divisive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
there's no democratization of information.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's just harder to connect.
Yeah.
You can't zoom.
Things move slower, for sure.
Yeah. What a tough time. I can't imagine.
Yeah. Okay. So,
all right, let's get into this.
Yeah. Because there's like war effort could be probably rolled into World War One.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's do that.
Military as could the camps, early military probably, camps, right?
As well. Yeah. Our lack of immunity to the virus.
What was so interesting about this too was, like, I read that there was the possibility that, because this affected, as we talked about, more the healthy, like, middle-aged people, people from 20 to like 45 or whatever. And there's a possibility that the older population had immunity through a different virus that, like, ravaged the states in like 1830
when they were
something like that.
Oh,
so like they might have had immunity from like their childhood that resulted in like fewer older people dying.
Interesting.
Yeah. See,
very interesting.
That to me is more like significant, like the strand or whatever you call it of this type of virus, like the lethality versus just like the virus in general, right? Like it was like the weird cocktail of it being like super lethal and not having been in the human body yet to like really adjust to our biology is, I think, more significant than just
the virus.
Yeah.
Okay. So then in that case, we take out the virus and we leave our lack of immunity to it. And I feel like the cytokine storm folds into our lack of immunity.
Yeah. I feel like Woodrow Wilson is more like, I don't think he's the cause. I think that's like a symptom of this outbreak, right? It's not like a contributing factor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But look out, because it might be to blame for other things. You're not in the clear.
Bad
there,
judgment,
Mr.
yeah.
Mr. Wilson.
He'll be on our World War II board when we do
Right. We're going to remember this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the shortage of available doctors and nurses, for the most part, can be folded into the war. Because while it definitely did affect, you know, local doctors who were not involved in the war when they became sick, it was like mostly, I think there were a lot of doctors and nurses deployed.
Mm-hmm. One point on that that I just want to say that something this reminds me of, like the sadness of this. They talk a lot about like during the AIDS epidemic, like how many, like what could have come of all the people who died. There were so many like famous artists who died and what they would have gone on to do. And that was a much smaller thing compared to this. Like just imagine how many amazing like scholars and doctors and like scientists that we lost during this like 2-year period of time all over the world, not just like American, you know, doctors or whatever.
It changed our path, the path of humanity. We lost, and you're losing people in their prime.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's breadwinners too, who just like would just decimate a whole family. Like you lose someone and it's like, there's no way for people to like care for themselves because of, you know, economics, gender bias, whatever it is. Like, it's just a really harrowing, tragic loss.
I mean, when we think of the, you know, the 1910s, right? We think of the war and how hard it was, right? Then we think of the 20s as like the roaring 20s, where it's like the party. Yes. We're like, what?
We're
just
alive.
Went through hell. And then the 30s are like the depression, right? Like you realize what happened and you're finally coming to terms.
Oh my God. Hangover.
Yeah, the hangover. The misusing of medicine, I feel like, can fold into misdiagnosing.
Yeah.
And we're left with the press, World War I, lack of immunity, poor living conditions, the Larry Vaughn effect.
Does the press go under the Larry Vaughn effect? Because they're
I think so.
Yes. Yes. And a part of me feels like the poor living conditions, I mean, it was a huge factor. Okay, we'll leave it on for now.
It's hard, yeah.
We also have misdiagnosing, and we still have the anti-mask league.
Some of that is like it's like a combo. You know what I mean? Like that all falls like not masking, not being able to live in like better living conditions, kind of feels like it's one world. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like they're both not helping.
Yeah,
there's like ways that you could help that they're like nope, but it's not causing.
Right.
Agreed.
But, yeah.
So we can take those off. So we've got four
biggies.
Yeah, World War One, lack of immunity, the Larry Vaughn effect, and misdiagnosing. Misdiagnosing just doesn't feel
right.
Right. I think we blame, and I don't know if we can blame our lack of immunity because we can't blame our lack of knowledge towards a disaster,
That is something that if you think about even for like a minute, you're like, it can make your head explode because like if you think about the fact that they didn't even know viruses existed back in time, then it makes you wonder what we don't know exists right now.
Which I'm sure is a lot.
Stuff we have names for that we're just like, oh, we're just calling that now because we didn't know X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And also, like you were saying, the older people might have had some sort of immunity, but it also was not killing like babies who are usually more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have the immunity.
Right.
And we all know, I mean, even then you knew like kind of stay away from the sick. Like this wasn't the first plague in the history of the world. Right. So it's like, we know that there are things that are undiscovered yet that could decimate us. But we also know that like, if you stay away from people who are sick, you stop the spread.
Yeah. Right. So this is what my instinct. I think we blame World War One and we slap the Larry Vaughn effect.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because I do feel that if it wasn't for World War One, the spread
100%
wouldn't mm-hmm. have been as large.
Like 1000% it yeah. would not have been this large.
Yes.
It developed and transformed in the war in Europe.
And then we had celebrations that continued the spread yeah. right, back
exactly.
home.
Exactly.
And then there was the Larry Vaughn effect where they weren't telling us, like, so much fold into that Larry Vaughn effect. It's like the perfect storm of, like, we have a world thing happening and no one's telling anyone anything about it.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that you're just calling it the Larry Vaughn effect as if
I love it every
that's
time.
A term.
Makes me so happy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to use that on future episodes.
Yes. Thank yeah. you for that yes. gift, Avital. Yes.
All right. I'm going to call it. I'm calling it the Larry Vaughn effect. You're getting the big slap. World War One, you're going to the alarmist jail. And there you have it. I mean, Avital, you have contributed so much to this podcast. If it mm-hmm. wasn't for you, we would not have the term the Larry Vaughn effect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I sure hope that's his name, the mayor. I looked it up, but imagine it was like the one wrong website.
We're going to start getting emails from Larry Vaughns all over the country and being like,
could you not?
But thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of this.
This was great. I want to say it was so fun, but it also was sad.
Yeah. That's what we're here for. Yeah. In the aftermath, subsequent research throughout the late 20th century uncovered a huge amount of information about the disease and why it was so deadly. In 1949, a researcher named Johan Holten excavated an Inuit woman's body buried in Alaska and retrieved a sample of the flu virus. Over 50 years later, that sample, combined with an effort by the USDA, led to the recreation of the virus's genetic sequence. Yep, just like in Jurassic Park. Thanks a lot, science guys. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clinton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the film My Best Friend's Wedding. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.